I'm Mike Sklenz, and this is Nintendo World Report's Connectivity Podcast, episode 145, Fiddy Kong. We got four segments for you this week. First up, Neil and Zach go over the results of our Kong test, and then they discuss Guacamelee. And then after that, Andrew and Don talk about Hyrule Warriors. And then finally, as a bonus segment, Zach and Neil return to discuss Guardians of the Galaxy. Enjoy the episode.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another Game of the Week segment with me, Neil Ronahan, and my cohort, Zach Miller.
Ooh!
Yeah, so last week we talked about Donkey Kong Country Returns 3D. And
which I beat now.
Any change of mind?
Fuck that game. Fuck it hard.
I mean, not to get back into what we were talking about last week, but with those Donkey Kong games, like, there's something to be said that I bought both Donkey Kong Country Returns and Tropical Freeze right around when they came out and didn't beat them. the only reason why I beat Donkey Kong Country Returns is that I reviewed the 3DS version.
Right.
Like, I don't know, like, I can't really put myself in that place and be like, oh yeah, I totally would have beaten it. Like, I beat it because I was reviewing it. And that felt like the right thing to do. And Tropical Freeze, like, a little bit that was that, you know, you're playing a game and then a life event interrupts it and you never go back to it.
Because
when I was moving back when Tropical Freeze came out. And, like, that's mostly the reason why I backed away from it, but I haven't gone back to it.
And by the way, original game, way too fucking long.
Donkey Kong Country Returns?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Tropical Freeze, I think, is only 6 worlds instead of 8.
Nice. 9 in the 3DS version.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there might be, like, a bonus one. I don't know. I haven't beaten it. But, yeah, so we did that thing with Donkey Kong Country Returns 3D, and we offered you guys a challenge to send us a dumb Kong name. And we got 12 entries, I promised one Guacamelee code that was going to be given to someone randomly. And when we get to that person's, I've already done, you know, the order that we read them. You were ordered 1 through 12. I used random.org. I hit random number from 1 through 12, and we got number 7. So when we get to number 7, I'll shout it out, and then you know who the winner is.
Yeah.
And you'll likely, if you are the winner, you'll probably know before this goes up. Also, we have one that we will get to that Zach and I were just chuffed by. we have another Guacamelee code that person will be getting as well. So two codes are given out. And stay tuned to the end of the show. We're going to have another contest, this time for Wooden Sensei. We only have one of those codes. We're going to try to keep this going, see how long we can go until people stop responding to our main ideas.
Yeah. We have awesome listeners.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone who, all 12 of you, the baker's dozen, no, just the regular dozen of people who wrote in, thank you. This was a great thing to read throughout the week. And I would just see all these great, dumb Kong ideas. But before we get to that, and then we're also gonna talk about Guacamelee Super Turbo Championship Edition after we get through all this Kong nonsense. Kong nonsense on Kong-nectivity. Nonsense? I don't know.
Yeah, we Kong-nectivity.
But yeah, we'll talk about Guacamelee at the end of this. Strap yourself in. This could be a while.
Mm.
And we also have a piece of listener mail that we're gonna kick this off with, which is from Donald Mick, and he writes, we know now that Shovel Knight has done roughly 100,000 combined on 3DS and Wii U as of August 4th, and it seems to be growing quite well if my street passes are any indication. If there was one game that could repeat the success of Shovel Knight, what would it be and why?
Hmm.
I think, Zach, you responded to Donald Mason
with I did.
What I think is probably the right answer.
Oh, really? Do you? I was being sarcastic, but I said
Half-Genie Hero. Not Half-Genie Hero. I would more the other one that's coming out.
Pirate's Curse. Heroes,
yeah, Pirate's Curse.
Someday.
It's like the last Shantae game. I mean, both of them came out and kind of languished on, like, shitty platforms. Not that, I mean, I love the DSi and the Game Boy Color, so fun platform, but, I mean, we all know the story, how the original Shantae came out really late on the Game Boy Color.
Roughly a year after the Game Boy Advance had hit shelves.
Yeah, and, you know, at this point, even when it came out on Virtual Console and 3DS, played that game and you realize, hey, it's a little dated, because it's like 12 years old.
Super hard.
Yeah, and then Shantae Risky's Revenge came out on DSiWare, and it's kind of funny, I follow WayForward on Twitter and seeing all the talk about Shantae Pirate's Curse, the DSiWare game, right? That's no, it's yeah. Risky's Revenge.
Risky's Revenge.
Risky's Revenge came out on Steam recently.
God.
A lot of people, right, way forward, is retweeting a lot of people talking about that game. And it's like, they're like, how did I miss this before? And it's, I mean, it's a really fun game. I think there's probably an old episode of Newscast. That's how long ago it was.
Yeah. It was our first game club game.
Yeah. I mean, I had a lot of fun with that game. Definitely some issues with it. But it seems, from what I've heard about the 3DS and now Wii U game, that the sequel to that, that's coming out later this year, that they're, you know, it should fix a lot of those problems.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited for that game whenever it comes out. And I think that it could have the potential to be a Shovel Knight-like success. I can't really think of any other Wii U or 3DS indie games that kind of jump out at me as being, you know, the next big game.
Yeah. Me neither, really.
I mean, we haven't really covered this on the show at all. We'll probably be talking to Jules about it at some point.
Drifter,
his new, like, bite-sized Metroidvania game. I mean, Mutant Muds was a special thing, and I don't know if Renegade Kid has kind of captured that, you know, that charm that was in Mutant Muds. And I thought the Treasure Knots might have it, but it looks like that keeps on getting pushed back. But Zero Drifter, I'm curious to see more of that game, but I don't know if that'll be, you know, this big gigantic hit, because it is kind of aiming at a niche, and it might serve that niche, but Shovel Knight is a broader game.
Yeah.
And I think Shantae might be the next closest thing to that.
Yeah, I'll bet that's true. You know, it's interesting you bring up that Renegade Kid thing. Like, he said on Twitter that, or in a news story that somebody put up, that Treasure Knots is just kind of in limbo right now. Like, yeah, they're just not working on it.
I mean, I can kind of talk to more, because when I saw Treasure Knots, well, I mean, we saw it at PAX East, and I also saw an event a couple months earlier. And talking to Jules about that, it seems like there was an initial concept for Treasure Knots, which is when he first heard about it, that was a little more like hardcore, because that was like where there was no saving, you had to play it all in one go, and then there was kind of negative feedback to it, which is understandable, especially for a portable game.
Yeah.
But there was this initial concept for Treasure Knots, and then after kind of the feedback and developing it, they kind of went back to the drawing board and expanded the game a lot. So it was originally supposed to come out at the end of last year, and because the scope expanded, then that's how it got pushed back into 2014.
Yeah.
And it seems like, I mean, I don't know the complete ins and outs, but it seems like that was kind of happening in the background, and then Zero Drifter kind of came about. And he even, it wasn't in full form, but when I talked to him back in January at a Nintendo eShop event, he did mention that that's, you know, the idea of a 2D Moon Chronicles game, which is where Zero Drifter kind of first started. You know, he was talking about how he wanted to explore that more. So it looks like that went out. And I think he's in that nice position where he can do that kind of thing, where he can put the brakes on one game that's in the middle of development and spin something up quickly and do that before he goes back to the other one.
Sure, me too. I also think it's funny that, not funny, but maybe maybe it's not a coincidence that Shovel Knight, which is also a treasure collecting game, came out, and then they put Treasure Knots on the back burner a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, maybe not so soon after Shovel Knight.
Yeah, Treasure Knots is a game that I'm really excited for, and I've played that demo they've had that's like it's like three levels and a boss, and I like that vertical slice of that game, but I want to play it in the the manner that it's intended to.
Yeah.
Because it seems like it's a game that's really based on, like, this is how you progress through it. And just playing four random levels doesn't really kind of satisfy that urge.
No.
But, I mean, I'm excited to see more of that game. But we're not going to see that for a while. We're going to see Zero Drifter, which I'm excited to see more about that game.
Yeah.
So let's go to the Kong sense.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the first one.
All right. Adolf Vega writes, Queen Kong. She discovered the delicious banana and shared with everyone its amazing flavor, and she became Queen of the Apes and gave birth to Donkey Kong. He also suggests Caesar Kong, the first intelligent ape and father of Donkey.
So is this a Planet of the Apes thing?
It seems to be.
Yeah, I feel dumb. What's the Queen Kong reference?
I don't think that's a Planet of the Apes reference. Yeah. So Queen Kong and Caesar Kong. So Queen Kong must be
Cornelia,
Cornelia, yeah, or whatever her name is.
You know, she was played by Judy Greer.
I know, totally wasted role. I like Judy Greer a lot. Like she's in everything.
Yeah, I do like how every ape in Planet of the Apes was played by a human being, despite the fact that, like, I mean, it's really subtle. You can't really see, like, I mean, outside of Andy Serkis, which you just know him because of Gollum.
Right.
But, like, everyone else, like, it helps make it look more real.
Yeah.
But, like, I would have never been able to tell you that was Judy Greer.
No, I mean, there's nothing about that monkey that looked anything or moved anything like Judy Greer.
And she was just, like, sick and gave birth and sick, and she was healthy.
Yeah.
And I don't know, she screamed.
Yep. Like a monkey.
The apes are kind of sexist.
Damn dirty apes.
The only
apes.
Strong female character, she's not really that strong, she's just sick the whole time. What the fuck is up with the ape kingdom? So let's move on to the next one. Olin Eddy writes, Cheech and Kong.
Yeah.
He's a Rastafarian Kong cousin who's accompanied by a living giant dreadlocked banana, like the ones you can win at a county fair for doing some impossible task, or plunking down $58 in trade-in prize upgrades. In parentheses, the original pay-to-play? He can super bounce while riding the banana, and instead of the traditional DK ba-dum, this action makes a resounding bong whenever they jump.
That's funny.
Yeah, it's a good old pot-smoking Kong.
Yep.
Like, I do like how we worked Kong into his joke, in that it's, you know, Cheech and Chong, Cheech and Chong and Kong. Yep.
That was good. I like that.
Yeah, clever.
Sebastian's got three. He's got Decepticong, the evil robot who can transform into a mecha ape.
That would be a hell of a boss. I would like him in the next Donkey Kong game.
Decepticong. Honky Kong, the barkeeper. And Kami Kong, the nerd ape. I like that one a lot.
And then, not to be confused with his cousin, New York Comic Con and PAX East. Kerbals writes, Crikey Kong, in his new adventure, Kong Down Under. He'd have a safari hat and probably get eaten by a Kremlin at the end. Yes, that was too soon, Kerbals. What the fuck, man?
It wasn't a stingray, though.
Yeah. He could have made it worse. He could have said, like, he was underwater and it happened.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Crikey Kong. Donald Mick. Hey, that guy. His suggestion was Biddy Kong. This matriarch of the Kongs makes Cranky look like a high schooler as she swats enemies with her parasol and utilizes her super secret burn at the stake technique to eliminate tiki hordes. Why not?
It's pretty efficient.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be the, whatever, like the high five move that they have in Tropical Freeze. I forget what it's called.
There's a high five move?
Yeah. Well, it's basically like each character. Donkey and whatever pairing he's with, they have a special move they can do.
I forget what it's called. Like a team attack?
Pow. I think it's called a Kong Pow.
Wow.
That seems to make sense. All right. Nice. Fred writes, I present you with Busty Kong. And he preceded this saying that he might have crossed the line, but I've read it over, and it gets very close to crossing the line, but it's okay. Back to Fred. Yes, I know what you're thinking. Candy is already kind of a busty Kong. But here's my shot. In the next game, the intro cutscene is at a wedding. Donkey Kong is about to marry Busty Kong. Yes, imagine the best-looking Kong possible. But right before they say, I do, Diddy Kong bursts in and objects. DK has huge hearts in his eyes and is too Twitter-pated to have a clue what's going on. Just as Diddy objects, Busty gives a nod, and hordes of bad guys with wings kidnap DK and Busty. They are taken somewhere where the wedding can proceed without objections. Dixie, Cranky, and Funky get all upset at Diddy for ruining things, but then we get a flashback as Diddy shows them all that Busty just wants to marry DK because she wants in on the family fortune. So then it's up to Diddy and Dixie to get to them and stop the wedding and try to bring Donkey Kong to his senses.
Wow.
So this dude didn't just give us a Kong. He gave us, like, the next game.
The storyline. It's like Anna Nicole Kong.
Yeah. So basically, I think Busty Kong just turns into a succubus at the end. That's my prediction. That's why the bad guys have wings. They're all like demons.
Oh, I gotcha.
This is
flying monkeys.
It's got layers.
It does. I like that one. From Leo, we have Blasty Kong. It's like this. In the next Donkey Kong game, Nintendo, a.k.a. Retro, should include an optional tutorial mode for beginners. One of the tutorial levels will be how to play the rocket barrel levels. Yes, we need that. And who better to teach you how to control the rocket barrel, including its new features, than the inventor, Blasty Kong. It seems to me he would fit into the Donkey Kong universe. I agree.
Yeah, I mean, that seems to make sense. It's a very logical one. And Leo, you won one of the Guacamelee codes.
Bam!
You likely will have already gotten an email, because I'm probably going to do that after I record this. I'm not too drunk. Daryl writes, Linky Kong is the legendary hero of destiny of Kong Island. He is the bearer of the Triforce of Banana and is locked in an eternal struggle against the demon lord K. Rulendorf in order to protect Princess Kongda. Young chimps of Kong Island are dressed in the traditional necktie and green hat on their 12th birthday to honor the legendary hero. I think Daryl is one of my favorites.
Kind
of
great.
And the picture is pretty solid, too.
I didn't even see that.
I'll have to send it to you after this.
Sebastian suggests Donkey Kong, Master of the Coconut Ball. Sure. I mean,
yeah, sure. Yeah. Jacob writes, Shaka Khan was born in Chicago, Illinois, and aspired from its youth to be a musical performer. It remains a lesser-known Kong as Cranky Kong never quite believed that his granddaughter was talented enough for the spotlight. Shaka Kong is known best for being the driving force behind the Donkey Kong bongos. However, appearing in-game or game credits, it is because of Shaka Kong's musical passion that such a control scheme exists. Currently, Shaka Kong sits in line ready to be playable in the new Shaka Kong Jungle Harmony title that emphasizes a new microphone controller. However, such a title has not yet been revealed, as the world is not yet ready for Shaka Kong's awesomeness or another musical peripheral game. I would like to think, personally, that EAD Tokyo pitched this right after Jungle Beat, and Nintendo was like, nah, man, you're making Mario.
EAD Tokyo
will be freed, and they'll be able
This is the Donkey Kong version of Jammerlammy.
Yeah. Oh, man, that would be awesome.
It would.
Especially if they got the David Wise music as part of that, too. That would be incredible. I would play the shit out of that.
I would, too.
Man, yeah, because I think the best part of all the country games is the music. So just make a rhythm game out of it. Why haven't they? I mean, well, they did make a rhythm game out of it. It just wasn't with the David Wise music.
Yeah.
I mean, Jungle Beat is a fantastic game.
I still haven't played that.
It's very good. Maybe next PAX East, I'll bring my bongos.
There.
And we can play.
Nice. Ryan writes in, this is my favorite. My character is Fitty Kong. He's got gold teeth, 50 bullet shells in his back, and can't throw a baseball for shit.
Ryan won our bonus award for having the one that Zach and I love the most. That's because
thanks to the fine
guys over at Drinkbox Studios. That's the reason why we have these to give away. We have more than one. We still have another one, but we might be saving that for a later date.
I see Fitty hanging out with Funky.
Yeah, but like Funky's like, nah, Fitty. Like, you can't go that hard, man. But Fitty, like, he gets shot a couple times, but then he realizes what he did was wrong.
Right.
And, you know, he learned from it, and he doesn't regret what happened, but he wish he made different choices.
See, Fitty is in a video game where he and Kong Unit go to, like, Iraq and shoot up bad guys.
Yeah, just to get his skull back.
Right.
And then, like, holy shit. Have you ever played that game?
57? No, I've heard it's actually good.
It is very good. Really? I have it on Xbox 360. And
oh, shit.
I wish they'd have local multiplayer, but maybe you have a 360, right?
I do.
We should buy that and we should do some fucking online co-op.
Let's do it.
Because it's basically just Gears of War, but it's like a pretty solid Gears of War.
Oh, okay.
And you're 50 Cent.
That's pretty awesome.
Like, what else could you want? And, like, there's 50 Cent music plays a lot. It's all about him and the G-Unit. You can pick which member of the G-Unit is your co-op partner.
Oh, my God. That sounds amazing.
Adman writes, for years, my family has used Stanky Kong as an insult. Stanky Kong is any person that has not showered recently or has the distinct odor of someone that has been sweaty. It also applies to anyone that admits to doing something gross. And he even gave us examples, a conversational example. I wore this outfit all weekend. Go take a shower, Stinky Kong. So yeah, that's our Kong test.
Nice.
And now, Ryan and Leo, I hope you guys enjoy Guacamelee. If you want to write in and let us know what you think of the game, we will probably read that on the air, too. If you guys write stuff to us, we're probably going to read it on the air.
Yep.
Just throwing that out there. So if you,
I mean, look what we just did.
Yeah. We did. We told you guys about Busty Kong. So Guacamelee Super Turbo Championship Edition is what we're going to talk about now. And that came out back on July 3rd, 2014 on Wii U. It came out on PlayStation 3 and Vita and PC last year. I played it back when it was on PlayStation 3 and Vita and loved the hell out of it. And I've been playing Super Turbo Championship Edition, and I still really enjoy this game.
Yep.
Have you finished it off, Zach?
I am right towards the end, but I'm running around trying to be a completionist, getting all the treasures and stuff. Yeah. And I'm spending a lot of time trying to get silver and gold medals in El Inferno.
Okay.
It's real, the platforming stuff is hard, but I can do it. But man, I suck at the combat. Because at that, some of those challenges, you have to be super precise.
I think, was it you who made the comment on Twitter about how you feel like you're shittier at the combat now?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
I have that same problem. And it could just be that, it's been a year. But, I remember being way better at the combat where I'm at in the game. I've been about halfway through.
I think they're putting more enemies in.
Yeah. Yeah, it seemed like they kind of, I was reading a blog post that they had. I think it was on IGN, maybe, where they talked about all the changes that they made for Super Turbo Championship Edition. And a lot of it was just very subtle balancing, doing things that most people probably wouldn't notice. And even the implementation of the two wholly new areas really feels organic. There were just a lot of moments where I'm like, I don't remember playing this before. And I had to go online and double check to be like, oh, that was a new area.
new town.
Yeah. I got really confused because I'm like, I thought there was just one town.
Right.
And then you find this other town with this weird big headed kid, and you're just like, all right, cool.
Yeah.
But I really like how organic that is. Although once you kind of know what to look for, then it is like, oh, you're going this direction, and then they arbitrarily block it and you have to go somewhere else to go there.
Yeah. But that's how the old one was too.
It's this weird, it is a director's cut. It's not just, here's some bonus extra stages like Donkey Kong Country Returns 3D.
Right.
We talked about last week where all the bonus content, you need to 100% the entire game that already came out.
Right.
In this one, the new content is packed in and they just kind of did a refresh on it. And I think it's fantastic.
And the new dungeon with the big skeleton guy is really good. There's some really cool platforming stuff in there.
Yeah. And a lot of the stuff with how you have the lava.
Yeah.
That will turn solid when you flip dimensions. That's super neat. And it's just a natural evolution of how you play the game. For people who are unfamiliar, it's a Metroidvania game where the emphasis is a lot more on combat, but one of the big mechanics is that you're switching between a light world and a dark world. At first, you can only do it through portals, and then as you get through the game, you have the ability to do it on the fly. So it'll be a platform is there in the light world, but it's not in the dark world. Or enemies will be in the light world and not in the dark world, and you kind of need to switch between the two to solve puzzles and fight people.
Yeah, so between platforms even, you'll be in the light world on a platform, and you'll jump, flip dimensions in midair to get to the next platform.
Yeah, I haven't gotten to that point yet, but I recall There were a lot of times when I played it last year, the regular-ass edition, that I got very frustrated because the platforming gets a little finicky, which apparently they balanced.
Yeah, so, I feel like it is better.
Yeah, I mean, good on them. I ever since I played, when I first got my Vita, I played Mutant Blomp's Attack by Drinkbox Studios. I fell in love with these guys, and I'm so glad that they're making Nintendo games.
Yeah.
Or games for Nintendo.
It's really good, and I forgot how good the music is.
Yeah.
Really fantastic.
The animation and the art's fantastic, too.
Yeah. Yeah, there's really no part of this game I don't like, except I don't... there is more combat, and I don't know if I don't not like that. It's just I'm not as good at it anymore.
Yeah, and there is a heavy emphasis on kill rooms, which is one of the things in Metroid-style games that I abhor, but I feel like it works a lot better in this game because the combat's at least a lot more varied.
And you get a nice silver coin at the end, which you can use to buy costumes.
Yep.
And the costumes are pretty great, I gotta tell you. They rebalance your stats.
Oh, I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm right now, I think I'm wearing a chicken uniform. and I think I have better, my health regenerates faster, but my stamina regenerates a little slower. I don't like the new power. I think the new power is kind of like, that is in every game.
Yeah, where it's just, the new power is called Intenso. And you just, like, click the sticks in, and then you're overpowered.
Yeah, for like 30 seconds.
Yeah. Or I think it's as long as you keep up your combo meter.
Oh, is that it? Okay. Yeah. Well, that must be why it doesn't last very long for me.
I think it's a cool, like, I was worried that it was going to break it, but it seemed like they also rebalanced it, so it worked with that.
And later in the game, there are enemies that go into Intenso.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That sounds terrifying. yeah, I mean, I've really been enjoying revisiting Guacamelee. I think it's one of the better... you know, Metroid-style games in recent memory.
Yeah.
And I think if you haven't checked it out and you like Metroid games that are a little more heavy on the combat, totally check it out. And even if you don't like combat-heavy platformers, it's probably still worth checking out. I think
it is.
One of the better games for me of last year, and I think it'll probably go down as one of the better games of this year for me.
Yeah, and the story is crazy, and I love the cutscenes, and
I like the characters a lot.
Yeah, they're really good characters.
And they have a lot of memes referenced.
Some people would say too many, but I think it's fine.
See, because it's all in the background. That's why it didn't bother me. Like, there are ones where I'm just like, oh, really, they did that? But, like, whatever. And it seemed like they added more or, like, changed them or something or kept them updated. Because there were a couple.
Yeah, maybe they kept them updated.
I can't think of what they are at the top of my head because it's all in, like, that first, the main town, and I haven't been back there in a while.
Right.
That there were a couple that I'm like, I think that's like, that's new, but I could have been wrong.
Yeah, it could be. I stopped paying attention to them pretty quick.
Yeah. I do like the Majora's Mask one and the
El Masco.
Link as a luchador is an image that I can't get enough of. Much like Link as Donkey Kong. Linky Kong.
Right.
Linky Kong is awfully close to Lanky Kong, and that kind of terrifies me.
That's true. It could be Lanky. It could be Lanky Kong as Link. Make the character better.
That would be the worst of all possible worlds.
The darkest donkey timeline.
Yeah.
So I really like this game, and I'm going to beat it soon. And although there is one, I think there must be. You must get a special power for getting really good grades in the El Inferno stuff, because there's a purple block that has an egg icon on it that must be a chicken power.
Oh, yeah, I did hear about
that. I don't have yet.
Ooh.
Yeah. But it shows up in El Inferno, so I'm wondering if you get it there.
I do love how instead of a morph ball, this game has you turn into a chicken.
I know, that is pretty great.
Like, I love controlling the chicken. I wish there were more transformations. That was one thing that I wish would happen, and that's kind of like nitpicky.
Yeah.
When I first saw the chicken transformation, I was just like, I hope there are more of these. And then that's it.
Yeah.
Just turned into an avocado.
I've been playing more as Tostada.
So have I.
Didn't get to play her as her before.
Yeah. Because I only played as Juan initially. But it is funny because on the cutscenes, they still refer to you as Juan.
Yeah, they do.
And like, your icon on the map is still Juan.
Right.
For those who don't know, there is a male character and a female character. You can also do co-op, which...
Yeah, I haven't tried that yet. I mean, I beat the Vita game or the PS3 game on co-op with my friend Marcus, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much Guacamelee.
Yeah.
For those who haven't played it, it gets a 2 thumbs up from us over here at Connectivity.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess now pretty it's great. Time to get to a little business. Our next contest, which will be for a download code for Wooden Sensei, a recent Wii U eShop release. Wooden Sensei got a 7 out of 10 from our very own Aaron R. Brown. And, it's developed by Upper Byte. I believe it came out on PC last year. And it's all about the wooden protagonist named Goro, who witnesses his village's alcohol supply being stolen. And then he goes off on a 9-level adventure, strapped with axes to get the booze back from the bandits.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's Wooden Sensei. We're going to be giving away a code for that. We only have one code. And here is the contest for this week. Or, well, it won't be a contest now. It'll just be a regular little contest. Or a pit test, because it's going to have to do with Kid Icarus Uprising.
Which is our next game of the week.
Yes. Hopefully we will play some fucking online soon, and then we can go from there. But we are going to be talking about Kid Icarus Uprising next week. And to go along with that, we have a contest for you. So there was the Eggplant Wizard introduced in the original. And in Kid Icarus Uprising, they introduced the Tempura Wizard, which is a wizard that will turn Pit into shrimp tempura. Which is delicious, but not when it's a human being. Or angel, or whatever the hell Pit is.
Yeah.
So, much like the Kongs before it, come up with what the next wizard would be. I think the only rules here is that it has to be some sort of food.
Yeah.
And once again, don't cross that line. we'll be the judge of that. But there is a line that you could cross. Don't cross it. You can tow it. Don't cross it. Send that in, once again, by probably August 13th. You might be able to get away with it. Follow me on Twitter, at nron10, to see if we don't record until Friday, like we're doing tonight. If not, then get those in by August 13th. Email them to connectivity@nintendoreport.com. We'll read them on the air, and we will once again do the random number generator thing and find out who wins.
Nice. I look forward to hearing all your food-based wizards.
Yes. Mine, I'll Tofu Wizard.
Hey, Tofu Wizard, yeah.
He soaks up whatever taste is around him.
and he's soft and squishy.
Yep. Unless it's firm tofu, then he's a little harder. But he retains a lot of water.
Right, yeah.
Yep. So you can't use Tofu Wizard. All right. I think that's it. Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Welcome, guys, to this week's Connectivity. Today we're going to be talking about Hyrule Warriors. I'm your favorite Australia correspondent, Andrew Brown, and I'm joined today with Dan Koopman.
Mm-hmm. Hello.
Yeah, this week was a great week for Nintendo Direct. They revealed some interesting new details about Hyrule Warriors.
They did.
Since then, Don got the chance to actually play the game.
Yes, I
do. And, So how much of the game are you allowed to talk about?
I'm pretty much allowed to talk about the first 10 levels that are four like levels based on a linear timeline, and then the free world, so Ocarina of Time, Twilight Princess, and Skyward Sword.
Cool. So, have you played a Dynasty Warriors game in the past?
Yes, I have played quite a couple actually. The first one I kind of started with them on the PlayStation 3. So I didn't play all of them. Like I didn't start like as most fans on the PlayStation 2. I kind of got late into the game, but then of course I got to experience also the spin-offs, which were glorious during that era, like the One Piece spin-off, the Gundam spin-off, and all that good stuff.
That's how I got into it. The first ones in the franchise I've played were the One Piece games, and that first and only, I should say. And I can understand the general consensus that they tend to be mindless. fairly simple experiences, but for what they are, they're fun, and they pay a lot of great homage to the source material.
Yes, they do. That's kind of why I like them a lot. I mean, many people will give them as mindless, but there are some really interesting like strategical elements there, and that is why I like playing them a lot, and that's why I played them for as long as I did, because I played one that was exclusive for 3DS in Japan, which was Dynasty Warriors Versus. I played most of the spin-offs as from that point onward. So I played like quite a bunch of them up till the point that I'm now playing Hyrule Warriors, you could say.
Zelda Musou. Let's just go with
Zelda Musou. Yeah, well, either way works. I mean,
yeah. About the that facet of the style of development that goes into making these games, though, it looks like they're pulling out all the stops with the Zelda tributes and the Zelda homages.
Well, it helps that Hayashi from Team Ninja is kind of also guiding. It's kind of the bridge gap between Nintendo and Omega Force in this one.
Yeah,
because he is kind of helping the entire project flow better. So, and considering he worked with Nintendo before on a game we won't necessarily mention. They kind of know each other, so it kind of helps them to build a game that can satisfy both sides.
The Musou fans and the Zelda fans, the longtime fanatics.
Yep.
Yeah. So in terms of like this is basically the ultimate fan letter to the Zelda series, I would say. The storyline, is it like a time travel story? We know a little bit about what's going on with the...
So I'm going to say a few things. I'm trying to be a bit vague at moments because I don't want to reveal like every single element of that game. Mm-hmm. But I will try my best here. So
what's generally in the first intro segment?
So the game opens with Zelda... like being in a dream and playing her harp, and then like a dark cloud and dark ocean arises and tries to swallow up Hyrule. She wakes up and feels that something is going to be, like something bad is going to happen within Hyrule, within the Hyrule that is set from Hyrule Warriors.
It's like the dream sequence in Ocarina.
Yeah, kind of, sort of, yeah, definitely.
Okay.
So she goes to the training field to check on the warriors, and she's like great potential in Link. And like after that, like the first battle starts, like the one we've seen thousands of times, the one at Hyrule Field. Mm-hmm. So you play through that. Zelda mysteriously disappeared. I will say it that way, and Link gets the green tunic and the scarf and the entire charade.
Oh, so we have seen footage of Link wearing like the the generic knight outfit, the blue and gray. So is he actually like employed as like a castle soldier or something?
He was like a soldier apprentice in the first mission, and then mm-hmm. he kind of moves up the rank because it's kind of discovered that he has a part of the Triforce, so he becomes kind of a general of the team.
Hey, you get a promotion.
Well, it's a bit more complicated than that, but again, I kind of want to stay intentionally vague for people who don't want to know too much. From there, you meet characters like Sheik and the new character Lana, and as you move along, then like some really bad stuff happens, and that will bring that open portals to the various worlds, and these portals need to be closed by the cast of characters, and they go all separate their ways to figure out what's going on.
So these portals lead to like other Zelda.
They lead to the worlds of Ocarina of Time, Skyward Sword, and Twilight Princess.
Okay, there was the features trailer that they released last week that showed it looked like an overworld map that was like separated between the Ocarina, the Skyward, the Twilight Princess worlds within the one
the worlds kind of match and match with the existing version of Hyrule in that game. So, and the environments change to like Death Mountain, to Skyloft, and like to all of those places.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's kind of awesome.
Nice.
Yeah, going into the story, again, I want to be vague. I can technically talk about it, but I won't. There is some interesting stuff going on in regards to Lana and Sia. And some interesting plot points, particularly later on as the story progresses. And it's much darker than I initially anticipated. And I would say that's actually a very good thing. Like, there's a good balance between the goofiness and, like, the really serious stuff.
Yeah.
I'm really surprised by that.
Cool. This, for those who don't know, this Lana is the... What do they advertise her? A white mage or white...
She's a white sorceress.
Sorceress of Light, something like that.
Yeah.
She's the generic anime-looking girl in the trailers. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da girl.
Lana is my favorite character.
Wow.
Yeah, no joke. That she is super fun to play as.
Yeah.
She has two weapons that I played with so far. The first one is the Book of Sorcery. Mm-hmm. And the Book of Sorcery is very good for, like, quick and snap attacks. Like, the easy quick attack is basically sending pages to the enemies, and they will flinch into a second. It's super, super cool. And then, like, her bigger moves, like, it provides, like, chance for crowd control to shove enemies aside, and her special attack, like, basically sees her humping through crystal books and then throwing the whole group of enemies like literally in the air. And then her secondary weapon, which I unlocked like a little later, is the Deku Stick.
And so the character's secondary weapons get unlocked as you progress through the game?
Yeah, like additional weapons. So secondary weapons are the item weapons, so I kind of mixed them up. But there are secondary weapons that you can unlock a little later, and they give you additional way to play as that character. Like, Link has the fire rod from, I think, A Link to the Past, I believe? That should be right. Sheik has the harp, and like Lana has the Deku Stick. And the Deku Stick is such a cool weapon because it allows, within the special attack, it allows the elements of trees to consume the enemies and throw them up in the air. You can just summon Deku Sprouts. You can summon with the focus attack, which is like the big final awesome attack. you can like throw like a whole Deku tree into the ground, and it will destroy enemies on the spot. It's really, really freaking cool.
Wow. Cool.
And with the Deku Stack 2, there are some even some Wind Waker elements in there, because you can use like a leaf to shoot enemies away, and you can even glide with that same leaf to avoid enemies for a little bit.
Nice. Cool. Did you get to play around with any additional like weapons or like little nods to previous games in the series? I know the Wind Waker itself is appearing in the game.
It's not really appearing. Like the Deku Stick is the biggest reference to that, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
There are some smaller like niche references to that thing though. But what I really like about like the weapons in general is that they're mostly super fun to play. Like with the fire rod, you can like destroy enemies from a distance, so you can kind of keep like some room between you and the enemies. So if you're a more tactical player, you can play it that way. So the other thing is, of course, the sword of Link, and that gives you more like more of a direct control and direct focus to destroy enemies right there on the spot. So there are various ways to play the game in the weapons that you choose, and mm-hmm. that gives it more like a sort of a more of a freedom than that some of the Dynasty Warriors games certainly lacked.
Okay, I understand that some of the weapons you can collect can be upgraded via the was it a card system?
Depending on the difficulty mode that you choose, like enemies mm-hmm. will drop materials and weapons. Materials can be used to purchase badges. These badges can upgrade your stats. Yep. And the weapons, they are basically better versions of like one weapon. So the sword can have like various different variations to it. And these variations can be better with strength and have also various abilities attached to them. And you can combine two weapons and combine their abilities for even a better result.
Okay. Like item crafting and weapon crafting.
It's sort of an easy item crafting, but yeah, it's there.
Is each character like delegated to a specific weapon type, like linked to swords and so forth?
Not necessarily. Like Zelda and Link both use swords. Like Zelda uses the rapier.
Yeah.
So what the weapons do though is they each have an element attached to it. Like there's lightning, there's darkness, there is fire, there's water. So the Deku Stick is water, for example. So there are various attributes like attached to those various weapons to make them easier to a certain enemy. So, because at the end of every stage, you will defeat a boss. Like there's, for example, Queen Goma, or there's Garaheim, or anybody else you can think of. And depending on you, and you have to battle, it's better to bring a certain element into the fight.
Oh, I see. Cool.
And the game will help you with that. They will give a thumbs up and say, hey, we will recommend to you this character. You don't need to play them as character. I will make that very clear. But it's better for your first playthrough to kind of listen to the game and say from, okay, sure, I will do this.
Interesting. From the footage that they showed during the Direct and a few previous screenshots and such, there were pictures of Link having the Master Sword equipped as his weapon, and then there was earlier pictures of him using the generic the Hylian Knight Sword.
Right. Like,
I find it slightly disorienting that he would have the Master Sword and have that able to be swapped out for a different type of sword.
Well, I will say this though: I have not unlocked the Master Sword yet.
Ah, okay.
In the first 10 levels, that the Master Sword didn't came up.
Huh. Cool. So it's we did see footage of him actually finding the sword and pulling it out of the pedestal, so I would wager that's some big part of the storyline, as is in most of the Zelda games in the series. So
that's quite possible, yeah. I can't really tell you. I can't tell you for sure, though.
Cool. So, who else did you get to play as?
So, I will say that out of the 8 characters that I played, I didn't like the harp as much from Sheik because it didn't give me that the direct satisfaction that I needed to defeat enemies. And most of the enemies are mindless, but it is a bit risky to control her with that weapon. It's not necessarily the greatest thing on earth. I liked most of the other characters, though. Like Darunya with his hammer is super, super effective and can wipe enemies like pretty fast.
Yeah, so how did the weapons feel as opposed to where they were in their original games? I mean, obviously, Darunia's hammer is the what is it, the Megaton hammer in
Yeah, the Ocarina? Megaton hammer, yeah.
Are the controls generally the same feel and the physics of using these weapons, or
the physics are definitely the same, though it will play differently because of the more dynasty-like playstyle.
Mm-hmm.
But the button layouts are pretty much straightforward, like more focused on the Zelda controls. Like there's even an option to switch it more to Zelda-like controls or to more Dynasty Warriors-like controls.
Are there motion controls?
If you play with the Wii Remote, yes. You can play with the gamepad or the Pro Controller, though.
Okay, interesting. All right, moving on. Besides weapons, there's the collectible items. We did see in the last Direct there was Ganondorf finding a heart piece. It was a new feature revealed that the characters do level up, as in other Dynasty Warriors games,
mm-hmm.
in which they would get enhanced stats, I would assume extra HP and so forth, or would
it's mostly additional strength that they're getting.
So the HP is generally delegated directly to the heart pieces, as in Classic Zelda?
Yeah.
That's cool. Did you get to see the cuckoos?
I saw one cuckoo, but I didn't attack him.
Oh, that's a travesty.
Why can't you call yourself a Zelda gamer. Why would I attack the harmless cuckoo?
To see what happens.
I'm not a jerk.
Oh,
okay. I don't want to destroy the heart of that poor little chicken.
I understand that if you are one of those Zelda gamers, though, you do have the option of attacking them and causing the horde of cuckoos to go chasing after you, like in previous games. Mm-hmm. It was also briefly mentioned in the Direct that you can get them on your side and cause a cuckoo avalanche to rain down on the enemies. I'm interested to see that myself. It looks hilarious.
I'm not sure how that one will go down, but I have not really seen that yet either way, so...
You've got some experimenting to do.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I have not explored the game to its fullest yet.
Yeah. So, in terms of other characters that that are available in the game, each of the main Zelda games in the franchise that are being showcased in this title, in this case, Ocarina, Twilight Princess, and Skyward Sword... It seems that there is at least 3 characters from each of these like flagship Zelda titles that are being showcased as playable characters in some cases the villains. It's completely unrelated, but one of the most mind-blowing moments of the trailer for me was the revelation that Link's partner in Skyward Sword is actually pronounced Fi and not Fi.
I don't even know what exactly should name her. I just call her annoying and I call it a day. that's a mean reference there. But you can play as Fi in High Warriors, and you can play as Agatha, the Bug Princess
from Twilight Princess. Yes.
Yep. For Twilight Princess?
She can. It looked like she could summon giant insect ghosts to battle something like that.
Yep, you could, yeah.
Interesting.
And there is, of course, the always lovely Midna.
Yes, my personal favorite Zelda sidekick, I suppose, would be the appropriate word.
She's pretty interesting player. She's a bit unconventional, especially with the wolf she rides on. But once you get a hang of her, it's pretty interesting.
It's interesting to note that she does have the wolf, considering she's obviously a separate entity to Link, and this Link is a different Link to the one from seen in Twilight Princess.
Yeah.
So, does it explain? Have you actually seen her in the levels you've played so far?
I've seen her in the Twilight levels, of course.
Yes. Does it explain where the wolf came from?
Not really, no.
Oh.
Her weapon is called the Shackle, so I'm not really sure what's going on there.
Interesting. It may get some sort of story explanation further down the line.
It definitely could be, yeah. I'm not even sure what's going to happen. Most of the stuff that I played so far has been kind of shown in some sort of way, like at E3 or San Diego Comic-Con or in trailers. But from this point onward, I don't know what to expect anymore.
Interesting.
For me, it's a blank slate, and I particularly chose not to play it up to this point because we're going to have discussions like this. So I kind of wanted to keep that after I was done with these discussions, so I can kind of keep them in the best ways possible to myself, because I kind of also don't want to spoil for anybody who wants to play the game.
We're 20 minutes late, but spoiler alert.
Yeah, but, I'm not trying to tell any spoilers here, so, because most of the stuff that we're talking so far has been shown in some way or another.
Yeah. So, from in terms of the story, as what was explained earlier in previous press releases and so forth, the main villain of this game appears to be a new character named Sia. That's spelt with C-I-A. She's otherwise known as the Booby Witch.
She is a kind of a really conflicted character. She's more interesting than she gives away at first glance.
She does seem to have more depth to the generic Zelda villain, like, oh, I want to suddenly rule Hyrule, or I'm going to take over the world because of reasons.
Yeah, she is very interested in the hero, which is Link. And to do that, she would put everything on the line here, like destroying the entire world is almost seems like meaningless to her. So there are some.
Really, really interested in Link.
Yeah, there's some new intrigue there, and her heart gets taken over by a dark force. And as you move along, things go kind of bad for her, and you will see why soon enough. I don't want to spoil that those segues too much, but once you see them, you're kind of like, huh, and you're kind of like taken aback by how serious that those parts in the game actually are.
Wow. Something to look forward to.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, let's see, moving on. Another thing that was, it was kind of known about with the Japanese version, but it was revealed for the international versions as well. The game does come with DLC. There's costume packs from the various previous Zelda games.
I want to say for North America, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry that you have to buy them all separately.
Yeah,
And I have to buy them from retailers, which is the worst thing on earth.
That is really, really dodgy.
Yeah, like in Japan, you get them with the special edition, which only comes with the art book. Or the treasure box, which comes with a scarf, like a treasure box, an alarm clock, and all that good stuff. And on top of that, you get all the DLC costumes. In Europe, we're not sure. We're honestly not sure what is going on with that. We know
the European version does come with Link's scarf.
Yeah, the European version.
We're not
comes...
sure if that's a special edition or
that is a special edition. But as far as the DLC is concerned, we don't know. Like they said, from details are coming later on this, so I can only assume that we're only getting it as a downloadable thing through the Nintendo eShop and not through specific retailers, because that would be dodgy. But
it should be noted, this is Tecmo Koei. There will be the option to get these later on down the line.
Absolutely. That's not the issue. But it's like, yeah, as far as how this European deal transpires or how it will concern like players, we don't know.
Yeah. As I was saying, for the North American players, they shouldn't feel too conflicted about choosing a specific retailer to get that specific DLC, because we all know it's going to, the others are going to be available later on down the line as well. But it is still a raw deal to have to choose, especially with price differences and so forth. But
it's a weird thing, because Nintendo has never done this before. Like, Tecmo Koei is pretty clear where it stands. Like, they offered all-in-one package in Japan, and like America splits it up between every single retailer they can find, and that's not exactly the best deal.
So, what else was revealed in this week's trailers? There's a few different game modes. There is a really nice overworld map looking adventure mode that's based on the original NES game. Mm-hmm. From what I understand, we're supposed to be pretty tight-lipped on that, so it exists. We can say that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And what else? What else is actually in the package?
So yeah, I don't know. Beyond the levels that I talked about, it's pretty much that's the game for you. There are some various elements there, and there will possibly be more unlockable characters and more stuff down the line. But I'm at this point, I'm not even allowed to talk about that.
Fair enough. So, given the possibility of unlockable secret characters, do you have any requests for anyone in particular that you'd like to see?
I would like to have the human version of Midna, but I'm not sure if that's even going to happen.
I suspect that might be one of her special moves, like a final attack that gets unlocked or something.
Maybe. I'm not sure.
It would be cool.
Like I said, I'm not further than the playable characters that are mostly shown, so I'm not mm-hmm. sure, even not sure what to expect from this point onward.
We both know, or everyone here at NWR knows, that our director Neil really wants to see Tingle as a playable character. I don't know about the possibility of that. It would be neat. I'm not sure what sort of attacks he would have.
It's definitely a character that is part of the Zelda mythos. But if it's going to happen, I'm not sure.
I'd like to see Ravio.
Oh, that would be cool, yeah. Going back to like gameplay, because we haven't delved on that too much. Like, it is still pretty much Dynasty Warriors in some ways, but they have done enough to make it interesting and appealing to me. Like, the ZR targeting is pretty much like based on the Z targeting from Zelda, and making sure that you can zoom in on specific enemies or bosses like that is super, super handy. Like, that's a big, big deal changer. And of course, like, there's a lot of Zelda elements there, like you can gut grass, there are like items to collect, there's a lot to enemies to fight, well, a lot more in this game than in the other, but there you go. But it's pretty much like Dynasty Warriors with a very well-made Zelda skin. It's very colorful, there's some remixes of the music there. It's a very bright spectacle. And I don't think that a Dynasty Warriors game has been this bright or spectacle.
Yeah, I certainly think it's unfair for any potential naysayers out there or those who weren't enthralled by the Direct to just claim that it's Zelda-flavored Dynasty Warriors. That's really selling the game short, and it's something for the Zelda fans as well as the Dynasty Warrior fans. It's I was sold ever since I learned at E3 that that Midna's going to be in the game, but I personally am stoked for the title. I can't wait for it to be released.
Yeah, I mean, if you like both of them, you're pretty much, I will say this, you're pretty much set in stone. I think you will very much like this. If you like one of them, hey, give it a try, because you might learn some new things about the other that you wouldn't have learned before. And when I started playing Dynasty Warriors like many times ago, I didn't know I would like it, but I pretty much did. And same thing with Zelda. I didn't know I would like it at first, but I pretty much did. And considering that these two franchises are together in one package, you can like one and learn about the other in so many various different ways that it's truly worth like exploring at least for once.
Yeah, that's so true. There are a plethora of other titles in both franchises that you can then move into if you find those elements in this one upcoming game that you do actually like.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well said.
Yeah.
So the release dates in the various regions, I believe you know the info.
Yes, I do very much so. So the game comes out in Japan on the 14th of August, so next week. At time of recording, Europe gets it on the 19th and America on the 26th of September.
Awesome. All right, so we've prattled on about this game for half an hour now, and I for one can't wait to play it. Be sure to check out our ongoing coverage of the game as it comes out. If there's any secret information that we're allowed to talk about, by all means, we'll be definitely getting it up on the site for you guys to read.
Yeah. There will be a preview on the Nintendo Force website, because I will be doing the review on there.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a special like preview message, roughly 1,500 words, that talks about the things we talked about today.
Nice. And I'll be running a Mariobilia feature within the next couple of weeks on the Treasure Box version that's coming out in Japan.
Man, I was planning to do the same. Now we both need to do a video.
You can be a special guest in the Mariobilia.
Yes, I will both do a separate video. I think that's fun. But I'm not going to make mine all over the top and like crazy.
Oh, now I'm going to have to animate it or something. Oh, I shouldn't say too much about this. I'm backing myself into a corner here.
Now you're backing yourself perfectly in a well-put corner. You now have to do your entirety of your best to beat my video.
Wow. I'm boned now.
Oh, damn. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, thanks, guys, for listening. And, if you're a fan of either of these franchises, Dynasty Warriors, Zelda, get the game. Tell your friends. This game needs a lot of love. Do it for Midna.
Well, the Wii U needs love in general.
That it does. All right. Well, thanks, guys, and thank you, Don.
No worries.
All right. Ciao.
Bye.
Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Please send your listener mail questions to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com, and if you've got a moment, please rate and review the show on iTunes. Also, please check out nintendoworldreport.com for information on the RFN Episode 400 campaign. Now stay tuned for a bonus segment about Guardians of the Galaxy.
What you do to me when you hold me in your arms so tight, you let me know everything's all right. I'm hooked on a feeling, I'm high on believing.
back with another Neil and Zach at the movies.
Zach and Neil at the movies.
Yeah. we're talking about Guardians of the Galaxy, which came out on August 1st and surprised the world by making a shit ton of money.
I guess maybe 94 million.
But I did like seeing the thing how like early estimates for like maybe like 50 or 60 million was like best bet. And after Thursday, Friday morning, they're like, it's going to make like 90 million.
it deserves it.
Yeah. I guess it goes without saying, if you haven't seen Guardians of the Galaxy, go see it.
Yeah.
We might spoil the shit out of it when we talk about it for the next 10 to 15 minutes. I really, really enjoyed this movie.
I dug it.
It might be my favorite Marvel movie. I'm not even sure.
But you know what? You know what? I think it's like in a different, it's like separate. I know it's not separate, but it feels so separate from the other Marvel movies that I feel comfortable saying it's my favorite non-Marvel Marvel movie.
Because, there are a couple
because
ties.
Because Thanos in it for like a hot minute.
Yeah.
And there's really no the other tie. Connection.
I guess the Collector showed up in, a post-credits scene in Thor 2. And eventually, I think what this is all building to is that, the Guardians will team up with the Avengers to fight Thanos at some point.
Who's got the Infinity Gauntlet?
Yes. Well, no, he doesn't have the Infinity Gauntlet.
Well, he will.
Yeah, the Infinity Gauntlet is still in Asgard, I believe.
Yes, it is.
But this is the best Star Wars movie that I've seen in my entire life. at least that came out during, because of that, I don't think I was born when Return of the Jedi came out, and that was the last good Star Wars movie for all intents and purposes.
I don't even like that movie.
I think it's pretty good, but that's a debate for another day.
It is.
I love Chris Pratt in this movie. I think he's fantastic.
He is.
I think he brings the right amount of levity and still hits like the mildly serious notes. Like his character makes sense.
Yeah.
And I do like the moments where it's like the way that he kind of keeps on holding to his old world on Earth and is, how he was kind of, he didn't want to accept that his mom was, dying.
Right.
So he just kind of ignored it and he kept on ignoring it. And then he embraces it at the end and wins a dance off.
That was
this is
so
also,
great.
This is a superhero movie that uses the term turd blossom in it. That's kind of wonderful.
And references the Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
Out of the blue.
And even talks about how dumb the Marvel MacGuffins are.
Right.
Referring to them as the Raider, the Ark the Covenant, Maltese Falcon kind of thing.
Right. It was just so funny. Like, I wasn't expecting that much humor. It's almost a comedy sci-fi.
Yeah. And I think that works really well. I think Rocket Raccoon's really fun.
Yeah.
I like the moments where they kind of get a little more serious with him, where, he is... The nature of that character is that he was, taken apart and put back together a lot of times, and he's in a lot of pain. And a lot of people look down on him because he's just a fucking talking raccoon.
Right.
But I thought Bradley Cooper did a really good job voicing him.
Sound like him.
Yeah, I expected it to be like, it's just going to sound like Bradley Cooper the whole damn movie. But it's not like it's hidden that it's Bradley Cooper. But he is Rocket Raccoon.
He's like doing a voice. He's not just Bradley Coopering.
Yeah.
And I liked his relationship with Groot. Like Groot, all Groot says is, "I am Groot," but Rocket Raccoon knows what he means. And he's like, "Well, of course that's stupid."
Yeah. Yeah. They're Han and Chewie. It's awesome.
Yeah, they are.
And Groot is fantastic. I don't think I'm the only person that like my heart was welling up during We Are Groot.
Oh, me too. Pretty great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really have anything except for, like, effusive praise about this movie.
I have, like, two criticisms. One is, really poor villain. Just don't care.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, it's almost a given with Marvel movies. It's like, is it Loki? No. Okay, so it's gonna suck.
Yeah, exactly. That's true. But yeah, I mean, I would have liked to at least know his motivation besides I want to kill Xandar.
And it's like they're wasting such good actors with these villains.
I know, he's such a good actor.
It's the dude from fucking Pushing Daisies playing this villain, and he does a good job in the role, but they just don't do anything with him. And it's the same thing where they used Christopher Eccleston as Malekith in Thor 2.
Yeah.
And like, he was even worse than
it's like
Ronan.
One-dimensional.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of disappointing because you have, like, that. I mean, the characters look great, and they have good actors there, but they just don't give them anything to do.
Yeah, and it's not like, I mean, I think you mentioned to me on Twitter, and I didn't realize this, that Lee Pace was also the king of the forest elves in The Hobbit. And,
oh, shit, you know, was?
Yeah, right?
Yeah. I did not tell you that, because I did not know that.
But, like, it's a much better written character, even though he's on screen for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You get so much more out of him. So I think it's just a poorly written bad guy in Ronin.
And I'm seeing a lot of stuff online, and it's getting to the point where it's, like, annoying, because people are just like, oh, Thanos is just a terrible villain. I'm like, he's been in...
You don't even know.
He's been collectively in 5 fucking minutes of a couple movies. Like, that's it. But I think that
it's like Marvel they're clearly building to him.
Yeah, and I think that Marvel is going to kind of face an uphill battle because with all the villains being kind of crappy.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to have to do an even better job with Thanos because everyone's going to be kind of negative into it going in.
You know, frankly, I don't love Loki. He's not threatening in the least.
Yeah, Loki's shtick is getting a little old. I think that's like Thor 2 relied very heavily on Loki's shtick. And it's fun. I like his interaction, especially with Thor. But it's just
not a good villain.
Yeah, because like you know that he's a piece of shit, but it's not like he's gonna completely end the world. Like I think Iron Man kinda hit the nail on the head in Avengers when he's telling him like you can't win.
Right.
Because he can't win. And I think that's kind of the threat that Thanos presents that I think, you know, Marvel needs to do a good job of showing is that whether they do it where, you know, Thanos does do what he did in the comics and just eliminate half the entire galaxy. I think that would be like, that's why I feel like Guardians 2 might end up with the Guardians of the Galaxy losing.
Ooh.
Which would be really ballsy because if you noticed, Marvel doesn't really kill characters. They act like they're going to.
Right.
But then they regrow, like Groot.
Yep.
Or they're not actually dead, like Nick Fury. Yep. Or they just straight up bring him back from the dead, like Agent Coulson.
Yep.
Which, like, I'm glad. I think Clark Gregg is Agent Coulson. He's fantastic.
Yeah.
But him coming back from the dead really cheapens Avengers for me.
It really does.
And I stood by it at the time, because I had everyone telling me, like, oh, they're going to bring him back. He's not actually dead. They didn't show a body. I'm like, they showed him stabbed through the heart. Like, he died.
Right. Did they ever explain how he came back on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Yes, they did on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And I think they used Kree blood or something to bring back.
Okay.
But even still, like, part of the reason for the Avengers going in for that final battle is because they're like, we got to avenge Coulson.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you didn't have to. He wasn't actually. Turns out he was okay.
So that's my first criticism is a poor bad guy, but you're right. I think it applies to almost all the Marvel movies. But second, and I talked a lot about this on Twitter, I didn't like that every alien was just a human with different colored skin.
See, that bugged the crap out of me. I'm just not as bothered as that. Because
I know, but I'm into like xenobiology and I liked all the animals in Avatar except the Na'vi because they're just big blue people and they don't fit in with their environment at all.
Yep.
So, you know, like, even what I was saying on Twitter is, like, even Star Trek, which is cheap, like, cheaper than a movie budget, they put some spoons on some foreheads. I mean, come on, guys.
Yeah.
But Carl, friend of the show, Carl Castaneda, explained to me that, you know, what's going on is the Celestials, long time ago, were basically playing God and creating different humanoid races an effort to achieve a perfect, you know, whatever humanoid. So that's why they all kind of look the same, just different colored skin.
At least there was a mythology reason for that. That is pretty neat.
I just would have liked to have, if Gamora said something like, hey, this is why all the humans look the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, that would be the kind of thing like they showed more of like Peter Quill's first interaction with that greater world. Maybe that would have been room for that, but they do kind of, they go from him getting abducted to
20 years later.
Cutting to him going and being awesome.
Right.
Dancing.
Yeah.
I love it that, I mean, it is the kind of thing where they telegraph it. They show him dancing in the opening credits, and that's how he saves the day. He dances.
Oh, and I thought that Dave Bautista did a really shockingly good job.
Yeah, Drax. Granted, like, it is just like, be a big dumb guy who takes everything literally, but he did a very good job.
Yeah, and he made me laugh. And he even had some, you know, emotional moments towards the end.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is that, like, every character kind of has that moment where they open up. And
Yeah.
And I anticipate a huge backlash in whichever one tears this movie apart. I'm already seeing it.
Oh, really?
A lot of people liked it. But, I mean, I really enjoyed it. And I can't wait to see these characters do more things. I think that all the roles, like, all the actors were cast really well.
Oh, yeah.
John C. Reilly as Roman Day is fantastic.
That was funny.
That's the thing, is it's just a really funny movie.
Yeah, and Glenn Close was good, even though she was in it for, like, a combined 2 minutes.
Yeah.
I also liked the stinger at the end with a certain Mallard.
Yeah.
Howard the Duck. That was unexpected.
Yeah, I mean, there is a part of me that's a little disappointed that they didn't, like, tease Age of Ultron at all. But I guess that kind of goes back to what we were saying at the beginning, how this is, like, an un-Marvel movie.
Yeah.
And I guess, like, maybe there's just no tie between Guardians and Avengers, too.
Right now. Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, I think that the bigger tie will likely be Avengers 3 or whatever the Thanos War will be, because it seems like that's how the Guardians will tie in to the Avengers.
Yeah, I feel like, what are they in? Are they in Phase 2 or 3 right now?
Phase 2. We have Avengers 2 is the end of Phase 2.
Okay, so I feel like most of the movies in Phase 3 will be kind of leading up to Avengers 3.
Yeah, or at least maybe building a bigger team, because we do know Phase 3 is going to have... the first movie in Phase 3 is going to be Ant-Man, and then Doctor Strange.
Yes!
And then Captain America 3, I think, are in 2016.
Yeah.
And then Guardians 2 is 2017, and I think there's an untitled movie in 2017 or something like that.
Okay.
We're getting 2 to 3 Marvel movies for the foreseeable future every year.
Yeah.
Also the same with DC starting next year, too, because apparently there is a second DC movie after Batman vs. Superman.
I think it's going to be Aquaman, don't you?
I don't know. I know that, Jason Momoa or whatever is Aquaman?
Yeah. Dude, that movie's going to suck so hard.
Yeah, I mean, I'll see it. At the end of the day, I still love Batman.
Right.
And I did, it's like I'll have to see it no matter what, no matter how shitty it is, like to see that movie.
That's how I feel about the movie I'm going to see this weekend.
And Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
Which we might be talking next week about.
We probably should.
But yeah, I mean, I'm excited for the future of Marvel, and Guardians of the Galaxy kind of shows me that they're still going to let a dude make a movie he wants to.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing that I like a lot more about Marvel than DC, is that Marvel still seems to have that little bit of the auteur nature. Like Iron Man 3, that is a Shane Black movie.
Yes.
Joss Whedon, his fingerprints are all over the first Avengers movie, and I hope/assume they'll all be all over the second one.
Yeah.
This was a James Gunn movie, and that's awesome. And that's what, I mean, it still worried me a little bit with Ant-Man, with Edgar Wright leaving, but...
Everyone has left Ant-Man by now.
Yeah. That's still there.
That movie's been through so much, like, rigmarole, I'm really kind of worried about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious to see how all it turn out. I still like Paul Rudd and Michael Douglas. I think they could do a very good job with those parts. But I think that'll be a big challenge, because people were pointing to Guardians as being the potential first big bomb. And guess what? Proven wrong. Guardians was an excellent movie.
Yeah,
I think Ant-Man is that next movie that people are going to be circling the date for that and being like, well, this could be where they slip up.
It's funny, somebody on Twitter or maybe Facebook said that Marvel's the new Pixar.
Yeah.
Like, people are just waiting for them to make a bad movie.
Yeah, and that's what happened with Pixar, and look at Pixar now. They're just making sequels to everything, and it sucks.
Yep. I will say that I think Marvel has already made kind of a bad movie, and that was Iron Man 2.
Yeah, but I think that was early, like, they hadn't built the cred yet.
True, yeah, that's
like,
very
people
true.
People love the shit out of Iron Man. But then it was like the Incredible Hulk. I mean, I don't get me wrong. I still enjoy Incredible Hulk and Iron Man 2. I don't think they're... I think I...
Does the Incredible Hulk count, though?
It is canon in this.
Okay.
I mean, they don't really reference it much.
At all.
Yeah. I mean, the Hulk has only showed up in Avengers.
Right.
Like, I think at that point, like, they hadn't built up their, like, their dominance yet.
Yeah, they hadn't, like, figured
out the dominance really was when they were like, guess what? It's going to be Thor, it's going to be Captain America, it's going to be the Avengers, and this is all happening in a year. Go fuck yourself. And then they pulled that off, and they're on top of the world. I mean, Avengers made $1 billion. And since Avengers, every Marvel movie has done way better
than anyone thinks.
Than everything. Like, I mean, pretty much... You know, building it, like, I think Iron Man did really well, and then, like, Iron Man 2, Thor, and Captain America all did all right. Avengers did incredible, then Iron Man 3, Thor 2, Captain America, and Guardians of the Galaxy are all doing incredible.
Yeah, and I think Captain America 2 did, like, maybe almost as good, or if as good as Guardians.
Yeah, I think Captain America 2 is, like, the number two Marvel movie
after so Avengers.
Far. And it seems like Guardians is tracking really, really well.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see where that'll end up. Because I think the order for, like, as far as grossing, I think it's Avengers, Captain America 2, and then Iron Man 1. Maybe Iron Man 3. I don't know.
Yeah, Iron Man 3, I've got problems with it, but I really like it.
I saw that movie the night before I saw Guardians, and I love Iron Man 3 still.
Nice.
I think I have to... Well, I guess let's close this out. What are your top three Marvel movies?
To have this fight right now.
Yeah.
Iron Man 1. No, scratch that. Avengers. Avengers might crack my top 10. It really might. There's nothing about that movie I don't love. Avengers, Iron Man. No? Okay, I'm going to go with that. Sorry. Avengers. You're having me on the spot here. Avengers, Iron Man, Guardian.
Guardians. Okay. I think my top three, Captain America 2. Although that's I'm going to put an asterisk near two of these. Captain America 2, I think I need to see again to confirm how much I like that. I really, really enjoyed that movie.
Yeah, I'm going to see it at the Beartooth when it hits the Beartooth.
I think my number two is Guardians, and I think my number three is Iron Man 3. And I think Avengers is a very, very close fourth.
Nice.
But I think with Guardians and Captain America 2, there's that asterisk that I need to see them again to confirm.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I have some issues with Avengers, and actually, one of my big issues is because I think invalidating the death of Coulson,
cheapens that movie
a lot.
In hindsight,
And I understand that you know you can watch that movie for how it is, and it's still fine. But that's not how that movie is.
True.
And I think there's also, I've seen people rail on it for it looks like a TV show, but it does look like it was shot like a TV show.
Well, that's because it's Joss Whedon.
Yeah, yeah. I think there are parts of it. The wish fulfillment of Avengers is incredible. I think when Lauren saw it, she made a comment that this looks like a movie that should be on the Sci-Fi Channel. And I don't disagree with her.
Yeah, yeah.
It has, of course it has a way bigger budget, but as far as the camera angles and the way it is shot, it is a TV movie.
That's true, yeah. You're right. It does have big action scenes, but they're very confined.
Yeah.
Now that I think about it, everything is confined.
Yep.
Even the fight in New York, they're all basically just standing in a corridor.
Yeah.
Punching things.
But Avengers is a good movie still.
Yeah, I need to rewatch Captain America 2, although I friggin' loved it. I need to rewatch Iron Man 3, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I rewatched that, and I think the Iron Man 3 drags in the second half, but it's fantastic up until that point.
Yeah.
I think that final scene in Iron Man 3 takes a long time to go through. And it didn't feel that way in the theater, but watching it now, it really drags there. But that lead up to it, just the characterization of the Mandarin is so on the nose and just perfect. And
The twist with that is so good.
But it's also, Ben Kingsley's delivery of that role is so fucking good.
Oh, yeah.
From both sides of it. You'll never see me coming. Just his damn voice. It's wonderful.
And I need, actually, you know what? I need to see that just so I can see the Agent Carter short, because that leads into the TV show.
And I need to watch, I think it's attached to the Thor 2 DVD, is the one that...
with Ben Kingsley.
Yeah, where the Mandarin gets picked up by the Mandarin.
Oh, is that what happens?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that's it. Go see Guardians of the Galaxy.
Bye. Yeah. Bye.